enlighten us. Taking from where His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj left off, the compassion of Srila Prabhupada.
Radhanath Maharaj has asked me to speak something on today's theme, which is compassion, to try to remember some of incidents from Srila Prabhupada of His great compassion for us. And I was very fortunate to spend a number of years in Prabhupada's presence, actually. So to try to isolate special incidences of compassion for others is very difficult, because every moment of Prabhupada's existence among us was a compassionate moment. He gave compassion in everything He did. I suppose the biggest example of Srila Prabhupada's compassion is the fact that He came to us. You have to imagine back, what is it, more than 40 years back, there were no 747s to jump on to go halfway around the world. There was no communication. Very little information about faraway countries like India, faraway philosophies like Hinduism or Buddhism. The times were getting faster, but things were very isolated. We were very isolated. Srila Prabhupada had a dream. The order of His spiritual master was to go to the West. Imagine this very elderly man in his 60s, began to prepare to come to land among us in America. He spent almost 10 years preparing, learning English, learning the philosophy, translating the philosophy, preparing himself to come to us, the most compassionate act of all, that he would come to this land of meat-eaters and ignorant people, who had no desires for spiritual life, only material gain. That He came among us was His biggest act of compassion. He prepared Himself 10 years of preparation just to come to us. Imagine that, giving up all other goals and actions just to be with us. Srila Prabhupada had many moods. I mean, like all living entities in the human bodies, we all have moods. Well, Srila Prabhupada had many moods also. Every mood we know of. But in all moods, He displayed His extreme compassion for everyone. Even in anger. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada got angry. He would be very strong in anger, but I'm trying to think of a couple of examples of Prabhupada in anger, and I can think of a couple. I mean, at that time we were all young people gathered around His feet, giving up everything else just to listen to Him and follow Him. Whatever Prabhupada said, we were so attracted to Him that we did it automatically. And nobody, He wasn't paying us. Everything we did was voluntary. Now, one time, his compassion would reciprocate with whatever your individual personality was. I remember some of my godbrothers, He was always getting angry with them. But it wasn't real anger. He was, because they were acting in such a way that the anger was a type of compassion that helped him grow in Krishna consciousness. He was always after Satsvarupa Maharaj. I don't know why. But Satsvarupa was always very humble and almost cringing all the time, like, don't hit me, don't hit me. And he did this wonderful thing down in Texas. Dallas, Texas. He took over an old church and built a huge school there, the first Gurukul in the Hare Krishna movement. It was quite a deal. There were hundreds of children there and teachers, very well organized. And Prabhupada went down. I was with him at the time. He went down to see the school. And we were walking in the morning walk, walking around the grounds, and he came to this fresh stump of a tree about, it must have been 5 feet in diameter, this giant tree stump, freshly cut, right by the building, school building. And he tapped it with his cane and looked at Satsvarupa and said, "Who has cut this tree?" And Satsvarupa said, "Well, I had it cut, Srila Prabhupada, because it was in danger of falling on the schoolhouse." Prabhupada just tapped the stump for a moment and looked at him and says, "Just see, you have killed this living entity who has struggled for 500 years." And he was very angry. But it wasn't anger like you and I know anger. It was a type of compassion. It helped Satsvarupa increase his devotional mood and spirit. He used to get mad at once in a while at Gurudas too. Gurudas, my God, brother, dear God, brother. Gurudas, he would give Gurudas incredible tasks to perform. He dropped him off one time on a train trip. The devotees were traveling from Bombay to Calcutta on a train. This was in the early days, maybe about 1970. And he said, as they passed through Delhi in the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, the train stopped for a 15-minute break in Delhi. Prabhupada said to Gurudas and Jamuna, but especially to Gurudas, he said, "You will get down here and start a temple." Gurudas tells me this story that he was more shocked than at any time in his life. And then after he got the Delhi center going somewhat, he said to him, "Now you stay in Vrindavan and build a temple." We had nothing there, nothing. So Gurudas remained behind and built up slowly what is known as the ISKCON temple there. But at one time during the early construction period of this temple, there was a big shortage of cement. And Srila Prabhupada had met Gurudas, and he said, "Well, how is the construction going?" And Gurudas said, "Well, it's going, we're way behind schedule because we can't get cement." And Prabhupada got very angry with him. He said, "You can't get cement." No. But I was watching this, and I thought, well, he's not really angry with him. It's a kind of a something that Gurudas needs to enliven his spiritual service. He was always compassionate in every mood. Sometimes he would display great strength through the Prabhupada and like commanding a command performance in these amazing displays of activity. And these would be very compassionate moments. I remember distinctly one incident in the first time we went to Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada. We were staying at a guest house there that had three big rooms we were occupying. And we had just arrived there, and suddenly all these people started coming there who were very important in Srila Prabhupada's plans for Vrindavan. First of all, the Goswamis from the temple where he spent all those years studying, Radha Damodar Temple, the Goswamis came there and demanded an increase in the rent. Prabhupada kept his rooms there, and he paid him, I don't remember, 6 or 7 rupees a month for this room. Rupee was worth a lot more in those days. And the first item was he came to either kick him out or raise the rent. So Prabhupada stuck these Goswamis in one room of the three rooms and started bargaining with them about the rent increase. Secondly, a woman and a man, I believe her husband with her, came to offer the land where the temple is now, the big land. She had decided to give this to ISKCON, to Prabhupada. So he put that lady in the center room and began negotiating with her the gift of this land for ISKCON. And then a lady came who was contesting this grant of land to ISKCON because the lady had promised it to her first. She was a Mataji with some following, and I think her name was Shama Mataji, I'm not sure. And so she was angry that she was giving the land to Prabhupada, and there was a lot of arguing, and so Prabhupada put her in the third room. And he spent the day jumping from room to room, room to room. I was just sitting outside watching this performance. He would come out of the room either like this or with a big smile on his face, depending on what happened. And I know that in the room with the Goswamis, whenever he had to go to the other room to deal with the other matter, I would look in the Goswami's room and they'd be asleep. Then when Prabhupada would come in, they'd wake up and the conversation would begin again. So in this frantic going from room to room, and then he'd yell out the door to me once in a while and say, Shamsundar, come in, take dictation. Boom, boom, and I began writing up contracts. And first contract was for the rent on the Damodar temple. And then I would be typing there, and then he'd come, oh, come in and take dictation. So in this way, in one day, one afternoon, he satisfied all of these parties, and when each one left, they were all happy as could be. Prabhupada dictated both contracts. They were signed, and Gurudas was dispatched to Mathura to register them at the government. So all that activity got done in one afternoon. He was so compassionate to all the individuals that everyone was satisfied. Even in his weakness, sometimes Prabhupada would display to his associate a weak moment, very weak. I mean, he was displaying all the phenomena of human nature. One time in London, early days in London, I was sleeping, middle of the night. I heard this voice in my head, Shamasundar. Boom, I woke up. I was sleeping in the bottom of a bunk bed. So I woke up and hit my head on the bunk above me and ran through the dark to his room and started to open his door. And he was on the other side of the door, and he was his eyes were closed, and he collapsed in my arms. He was sick or something. I didn't know what was going on. He collapsed in my arm. And I picked him up, and he didn't weigh anything. It was like the weight of a blanket or something. So light. Most of the time, Prabhupada was so heavy. I mean, it was just like a 200-pound man in his small body, it seemed. But he was like a small child. And I laid him on his bed. And I thought, oh, Prabhupada, what's going on? And he just opened one eye and said, no hospital. This was the middle of the night. Devotees were sleeping, so I turned the fire up to full and heaped blankets on him, and he laid there in bed for hours. And then he opened another eye and said, Shamsundar, make a paste of pepper, black pepper. He gave me instructions, and I ran out and woke somebody up and had this girl make some paste for his forehead and brought it in and put it on his head, and then he went back to sleep. And a couple of hours later, I was just sitting there. Oh, my God, my whole life was at an end. Srila Prabhupada is leaving me, leaving all of us. What's going on? Oh, I was so worried. And a couple of hours later, he jumped up out of his bed and said, so, it is time for the morning walk? Such compassion. That's bad. Every mood of Prabhupada's was compassionate. Most of the time, Srila Prabhupada was very mellow. And all of his mellow moods, of course, were extremely compassionate. When we first, he came to the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco, where we were all young hippies. This is 1966, 67. Our way of life was very casual. We didn't have any programs. We didn't work. We didn't spend. We didn't buy things. We didn't partake in the material activities of our parents. So Srila Prabhupada came among us. He's the only Swami or guru or teacher of any kind in all of the world who came to live with the hippies in Haight-Ashbury for years on end, months on end. And at the beginning he saw us and he loved us so much. He was so compassionate to us that he didn't say much about the rules and regulations, the principles, the basic four principles of Krishna consciousness. He knew that would drive us out. He did say right away about meat, and that was okay. And so many of us, but several in particular, we had dogs. We had pet dogs. We were very attached to our dogs. So when we went to the temple in the morning on Frederick Street, Prabhupada would be up on his Vyasa-san to speak to us. Morning, he spoke every morning at 7 and every evening at 7. So every morning, early in the morning, we would go, all of us, with our dogs. I had some kind of a collie dog, and Gurdas had a German shepherd-type dog, and Dayananda had some little mutt, and pretty soon all of our dogs knew each other well, and they would all come. They would all come and sleep outside the door while Prabhupada gave his lecture. The whole doorway was filled with dogs. And sometimes if someone left the door open, they would come inside and sit on by the wall with the devotees. Prabhupada never said anything. He would walk down from his Vyasasana and leave the room and tap the dogs away as he walked out, you know, cleared the dogs away. Never said anything. One day, finally, he told us, he says, you should not keep dogs. This will detract from your Krishna consciousness. It is better if you give up your dogs. So we did, one by one. But this is an example of Prabhupada's mellow form of compassion. He was so liberal. And after, my favorite moments of Prabhupada's compassion was after big events or big lectures, Prabhupada would go up to his room and devotees would come in and sit down and chat with him, and he would go over the events of that evening or that afternoon, whatever, and he would say things like, well, what did you think when I told him this? Or, do you remember that funny-looking guy over there? And he would chat about the events that happened during the night. We'd all laugh, joke after joke he would tell, and this kind of unwinding from some big event or confrontation that seemed very serious at the time, but that Prabhupada would make such light of later. And in all these meetings with people or lectures he would give, I mean, he was compassionate in every answer he gave to when people asked him a question or confronted him about some point. There's always the famous story. I actually heard him do it many times about when someone would challenge him with the idea that they were God. He would always listen very carefully and make the same remark most of the time, that you are not God, you are dog. And it seemed like very angry and pointed at the time, but it was a form of Prabhupada's compassion that he would meet this kind of aggression with his own aggression. And many times, I mean, this happened several times at least, especially in Haight-Ashbury, when some girl would stand up and after his lecture and say, Srila Prabhupada, I want to marry you. his response was always the same. He kind of seemed like, okay, you know, I'll marry you. But at the same time, he would say, but I'm sannyasi. I'm forbidden by my order. Otherwise, I would marry you. He was always compassionate to, sometimes, like these people who would challenge him, but other times he would point out a specific person in his audience. I saw him do this many times as well. One of the most prime examples is Radhanath Maharaj. He would point out some special person in his audience. Sometimes 5,000 people would be there, and he would see one person and say, "You, please come up and join me. Come up and join me for life." That was a special compassion he gave to some people. He did that with Radhanath Swami here in Bombay back in, I think it was 1971, at the Cross Maidan Pandal program. He saw Radhanath way in the back and told Gurudas to go fetch him and bring him to sit with him. Some of my personal recollections of Srila Prabhupada's personal compassion to me, I think the most graphic example I always think of first when I think of Prabhupada's mercy and compassion is an incident at the Mumbai airport, Bombay airport it was called in those days. We had been in Nairobi in Africa for about a month, and Prabhupada's next destination was Mumbai, Bombay. The devotees had organized a huge pandal program here in Bombay for Prabhupada's return to Bombay. I mean, there were thousands of people waiting at the airport for his arrival. A huge program had been designed, a week-long program somewhere in Bombay with big advertising all over town. And I was in charge, as Prabhupada's secretary, was in charge of his travel arrangements. So in Nairobi, I went down to the East African Airlines, bought the tickets, and thought no more of it. We were on the plane. We landed at the airport. We could hear the devotees in the background very loudly. And we came to the immigration desk, and they said, "Where are your yellow cards?" Yellow cards, what's that? "These are your immunization certificates." "Oh, we don't have any." "Aha, you are coming from a country where yellow fever shots are required to enter India." "Oh, what does that mean?" "Well, that means either you have to catch the next plane or go into quarantine for 2 weeks in our facility." Oh, my God. And Prabhupada looked at me. I mean, it's my fault. I didn't do this. I didn't arrange for this. Everything was blocked. The whole program was finished. So many thousands of people were going to be disappointed. And I felt so bad. I thought, oh, if ever Prabhupada should be angry with me, it should be now. I really screwed up. And I was yelling at the immigration people because I was angry. And I thought, you know, I looked around at Prabhupada very sheepishly, like, "I'm so sorry, Prabhupada." And he looked at me and had the most compassionate look in his eyes. And he said, "Never mind, Shyamasundar. We need a rest. We need to take a good rest anyway." So we sat for 2 weeks in that quarantine at the airport. All the whole program was stricken off. They didn't have it. So I thought at that point that Prabhupada's anger should be all over me, but he withheld it. He never got angry with me the whole time I was with him. I can't remember any incident where Srila Prabhupada was angry with me because my personality was such that it wouldn't take it. I'd collapse if Prabhupada got angry at me. Another incident of his personal compassion. When we arrived in London and acquired a facility there, at Berry Place near the British Museum. This was a very good address in the best part of downtown London. So, and it was a fairly small building that we rented, but I wanted to have it, because it was in central London, I wanted it to be a showpiece for Krishna consciousness. So myself and a few others began to build this very complex temple room with exotic woods and tremendous architecture that we took from Indian books on Indian showing Indian temple pictures. And the project got strung out. It took weeks. Weeks turned into months. And Srila Prabhupada finally called us on the telephone from Los Angeles and said, "Never." I said, "Prabhupada, the temple is not finished yet." He said, "Never mind, I'm coming." Well, he just came, and we had no place for him to stay. So anyway, we found some arrangement for him to stay. And meanwhile, kept working on this temple day and night to try to finish it. But suddenly I got the idea, well, you know, Srila Prabhupada's here. That's all we want anyway. We just want him here with us. So let me slow down this temple work a little bit. Maybe he'll stay longer. So I did. And actually he did. He stayed month after month after month. But finally he got a little bit upset. He said, "You must finish this temple." And he gave us the deadline. So we hurried up and we got it finished. And then after he came there one morning, shortly after, we were taking the morning walk, his morning walk, through Russell Square, a nearby park. And as we were coming back to the temple, he took his cane and tapped on the wall right beside the entry door. And he turned around to the other devotees who were with us and he said, "You shall put a plaque here that says, this temple has been lovingly built by Shama Sundar Das." This is no way. But he insisted, and they put a brass plaque there. Prabhupada's I mean, some of the most, at that time, the most famous people in the world, of them, probably the most famous person in the world was a man named John Lennon. I mean, you just have to have been there at the time to know. I mean, there's never been a person or a group of persons more globally popular than this group was called the Beatles. And John Lennon was basically their leader. He was so popular around the world that there wasn't a person in the world who didn't know who he was, basically, or follow what he was saying in the news and the headlines. He even made one statement, and it was worldwide news, that it seems like I am more popular now than Jesus Christ. And the fact of the matter was, it was true. And when Srila Prabhupada came to London, he was staying at John Lennon's house. Suddenly, the most famous person in the world, Srila Prabhupada, was his guest. For week after week, he stayed at John Lennon's house. And one night, John Lennon, I'm trying to give an example of Prabhupada's compassion in different ways, different ways that he gave his compassion. One night, John Lennon requested, and his wife, Yoko Ono, requested Srila Prabhupada to come over to their house. We were staying in separate quarters out 100 meters from John's house. He wanted to meet with him privately. This was late at night also. So Prabhupada came over. He told me this story after. John Lennon did not want any devotees to come with Prabhupada. He wanted Prabhupada to come along. So Prabhupada told me this story later. He said that John Lennon requested, after they sat down point blank, John Lennon requested him to reveal himself as Krishna. A mark of Prabhupada's compassion for this man is that he stood up and walked away. Another of John's group, this is to show you examples of different ways Prabhupada reacted, was named George Harrison. He was also a Beatle, one of the most famous people in the world. On the other hand, he was so humble that he would sometimes stand outside Prabhupada's door and refuse to go in if Prabhupada was busy with some other task. He gave in charity to many things to the devotees and to the temple and tried to push Krishna consciousness all over the world. And one day Prabhupada said, come, and sit. And George said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, should I give up everything now? Should I become like the devotees here? Should I shave my head and live the whole Krishna conscious lifestyle like the devotees? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, you stay in your present way of life, he said, and just, you know, spread Krishna consciousness however you can. He said, because you are more than a devotee to me. He says, you are like my own son. So that kind of compassion in contrast to getting up from John Lennon and walking away. I could go on and on. Another personal example of Prabhupada's compassion I'll never forget. He came to Bombay here, and at the same, I was already here. I was organizing this Pandala program and so on, sitting in Prabhupada's room at Akash Ganga, and one devotee arrived from Germany, Hansa Duda Das, who was, Prabhupada had been requesting for almost a year or maybe more to try to get him a visa to go to Russia. This was back in 1970 or 71, when getting a visa to go to behind the Iron Curtain was a very difficult procedure. There was no one could travel in Russia in those days, especially from the West. So he had been requesting Hans to, he wanted to go behind the Iron Curtain and preach Krishna consciousness to the communists. Unheard of. This is so radical. So he kept after Hansa Duda and others to try to get him a visa. Hansa Duda reported when Prabhupada asked him if he'd gotten any progress, and he said, Hansa Duda said, no, I cannot do it. So he looked at me and he said, Shyamasundar, can you get me a visa? I said, well, I don't know, Prabhupada, but I'll try. So the next morning I went down to the Russian consulate here in Mumbai, and by some miracle, I don't recall all the details, but by the end of the day, I had him a visa. So I went up to him, and he says, here's your passport, Prabhupada. You have a 5-day visa. And he says, aha. He said, well, can you type? And I said, yes, I can type. And he said, then you will be my secretary. A personal, compassionate incident that I'll never forget. But even the smallest devotee, whoever it was, the smallest devotee anywhere in the world had access to Prabhupada's compassion. They would write him letters, through the letters. In those days, there was no telephone, there was no email. But he would get letters, sometimes 30, 40 letters a day, and every devotee got an answer from Prabhupada. He would personally answer everyone's letter. He would give dictation. And I remember some of these letters were filled with suffering. Prabhupada would, several times people would say, Srila Prabhupada, I'm so depressed, I'm thinking about suicide. And Prabhupada would always say, you instruct those devotees immediately to come to me and live with me. So I would write the letter back. You are requested to come to Prabhupada and immediately and live with him. That was his compassion to all the devotees. And we can see even in when Prabhupada ended his letters, he was always ended his letters, your ever well wisher. If you meditate on those words, your ever well wisher, I mean, that is the personification of compassion. He always wishes us well under every condition. And this tradition or this mode of behavior of compassion is passed down from Prabhupada down through his disciples and their disciples. It's alive and flourishing. Examples, one of the chief examples, of course, is that you can see right now is the compassion that Srila Prabhupada has passed down to Radhanath Maharaj. Radhanath has so fulfilled Srila Prabhupada's scheme, his mood of compassion, that he's stuck here for 20 or more years building all of this fabulous array of devotional life that you have here. It's all his compassion to you because of Prabhupada's compassion to him. This temple, all of these works, the hospital. I was there yesterday to the hospital and thinking how many tens of thousands of people have been helped. The compassion of Krishna consciousness is that has changed their lives at the hospital and the school and all of these wonderful arrangements here in Mumbai. They are not to be matched anywhere else in the world at this point. So many hundreds of beautiful, fresh faces in a room at a time every day. Not only every day, but at all hours of every day. This is so unique and so wonderful. So Srila Prabhupada's example is living today with us. And even his disciples have learned this so well and they display this mood so well. I mean, in my own case, I can tell you... The most recent magnificent display of compassion in my life, about a year and a half ago, during a routine examination of my body, they discovered a tumor in my liver, a cancerous tumor, which is a death sentence. It's a death sentence. You have that in your liver, you're finished. The only option is you get a new liver immediately. Only to get a new liver, you have to wait on a list, sometimes 3 years to get it. And by then, normally, you're dead. So I informed Radhanath Swami of this position. There's an alternative option, and that is if some living person can give you half of their liver, they have a procedure now to transplant that into you. A living person, it's called a living donor. They cut the liver in half out of this person's body and put it throbbing and bloody into your body. Take out your old liver and throw it in a jar. This is an option. So I informed Radhanath Swami of this predicament. And he put out on a website, the Hare Krishna website, that Shyama Sundar needs a new liver. You know, the compassion of Krishna consciousness is so widespread now that within 24 or 48 hours, they lost track at 50 people had offered to give me a liver. 50 devotees, none of whom I'd ever met in my life. Well, Dayananda, my old friend from San Francisco, offered, but I told him, hey, you're too old, man. You had too many drugs in your early days. I don't want your liver. But all these offers, I mean, from Greece and from China and from Africa and from Norway and England, from different parts of America, people that I never met in my life called up this hospital in Chicago and said, I would like to donate half of my liver to this person. I mean, if that isn't so, that's about as compassionate as you can get to give up such a... I mean, there's a threat of death to do that. I mean, sometimes people die on the operating table giving their organs. So one devotee here in one of Radhanath's disciples was in New Vrindavan at the time in West Virginia. I was in Chicago. And he offered. I'd never met him before in my life. I couldn't even remember his name. After about 3 days, they kept saying, Gopinath wants to give you a liver. Who was that again? Gopal Das? Within a week, they had us in a room for 20... the operation was 8 hours long, side by side on two beds. They cut open his body, cut off half of his liver, cut my body open, grabbed my liver out of there, and put in half of his liver. It took 8 hours. Could you imagine what... Dozens of people working, sewing off little blood vessels and bile ducts. And this very of all operations, practically of transplant operations, it's the most difficult of all, and the chances of success are so iffy. I mean, it's very both parties can die very easily, and the complications can haunt you for years. So I would like to see if is Gopinath still here? There he is. Please stand up, Gopinath. Please. Here's a living example of Prabhupada's compassion. Hari Bol. Thank you so much, Gopinath. Still alive and well. Thank you very much.
Hari, you should have his wife stand up too. She suffered more than him, probably.
Oh!
Parijata.
Sarva.
Parijata.
Parijata. Where are you? Yes. Gopinath told me that he asked his wife if she should do it, and she said, absolutely, you should do it. Where is she? Come out here. We can't see you. Please come out.
Gopinath Prabhu asked Parijata Devi what she felt about him donating 67% of his liver. And her reply was, you'll never have an opportunity like this to please Srila Prabhupada. You should do it.
Parijata. Thank you very much, Parijata. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
They had a 2-year-old son at the time. Thank you, Shamsundar.
Thank you.
Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam.